Okay. So I put these quotes on the board to give us some food for thought. So the topic, as you know, is what is the purpose of art? And to begin, I suppose we would want to ask, what is art? And you could probably just have that for a cafe subject. But we'll skip it. I propose that a working definition would be, art is anything that requires some creativity. And then you may ask, well, what's creativity? And I'd say, well, that's something, it produces something that is not there before. So art is very general for us, but I would say it has that creative aspect. So these are some questions I put down that might guide us through some discussion. What is it supposed to do to us, art? Why is it often ambiguous? Many people have different interpretations of art. We did what is art. And I singled out music, you know, the visual arts and music. Music affects us differently, I think, than the visual arts. I think the visual arts are more intellectual. Music is somehow seeps underneath the consciousness sometimes, but not always. It can be very intellectual. There is a mixture of elements in art. A lot of art comes from the intellect, but a lot of art comes from the emotions, the feelings. So there's that dichotomy. And you can approach art also from those two points of view. When I go to see classical music concerts, you know, they're very structured. There's a lot of structure there, so you can really sit down and analyze it with your intellect. But a lot of people don't do that. You can just listen to the music, I think. That's probably what the Beethoven and Mahler were trying to get across, was some underlying theme, not necessarily the structure of it. And then spiritual. So Keith Kandinsky talks about spirituality and art. What does that mean? What is the spirituality? We can also ask, when did art start? Why did art start? Why is there any art to begin with? Do animals have on art? Are there other mammals that have brains that are similar to ours? I remember this documentary about these ancient prehistoric cave paintings they found in France about 10 years ago, and these are perfectly preserved. They were done about 35,000 years ago, at the dawn of civilization, the dawn of, that's when the Homo sapiens and the Neanderthals were sharing that part of Europe together, so it was very, very early in the development of civilization. But they're quite interesting and poignant to us these days. So you may wonder what, there's a huge gap, conceptual gap between them and us, but you might wonder what it meant to them, what it means to us. Can we understand what they were trying to do? And the other way around, would they even begin to understand what we're doing in art? I often think about also what Beethoven would think about, you know, listening to Led Zeppelin or something. It's funny, but you know, he might actually think this is an interesting concept, you know, because it's a new medium, these electronic instruments and such things, and it's a new kind of style, and he might really appreciate that. So I'll read out these quotes, and then I'll open up the floor to, you know, discussions, and I'll be here as the moderator. And the bouncer, if you get out of control.
Are we drinking?
No, but if you get out of control. So Anselm Kiefer is a contemporary artist in France, I believe.
A painter?
He is he does visual arts, but he does sculpture, painting, he does huge structures. He took over a whole abandoned factory site in France for the last 10 years and rebuild it. There's an interesting documentary called Over Your City's Grass Will Grow. It's a documentary called Over Your City's Grass Will Grow. It's a quote from the Bible, which was made just a few years ago. It's fascinating, and that's a very good introduction. They go to that place. But he has lots of writings on art, too. So he's a very intellectual, he's a very political, very intellectual type of artist. His art is grayish and brownish and messy, and it does need some thinking. But I just pulled out some quotes, so he's a great writer. Art is asking important questions.
It's good to know who these people are. Like,
yeah.
I've never heard of them.
Okay, yeah, so they're all interesting people, I think. Susan Sontag, art critic. This is from her book on photography. So she's very intellectual. She herself is not an artist, I guess, but writing, you might think that's art. But she started off by writing about photography. And this is what she said about photographers, but I think she was also, in this paragraph, she was also talking about those tragic French writers too. The artist feels compelled to give voice to one's pain. So very personal thing. Some artists are doing things for the service of the community, and some artists are doing it just for themselves. Well, Vasily Kandinsky, great painter, kind of abstract stuff, Russian, but lived in New York for many years. That's like 1860 to 1950, something like that, that period. He wrote lots about art. There's a nice big fat book of his collections of writings on art, and it's very interesting. All his letters, all his newspaper articles, all his speeches, all this. He was a great writer. So the nature of art remains forever immutable. So that's interesting. Go back to those prehistoric people and see if they have some line of continuity. Art is never produced by the head alone. Yeah. So that's another thing we can discuss: is the intellectual versus the spiritual, or whatever words we want to use for the other part of us, our minds. Van Gogh. This is from his letters. The great to read. He's a great nature lover, and it seems that, you know, he belonged to nature, and he just loved painting nature. He painted people in nature most of the time, nature by itself. So this is a long sentence of his: art is man added to nature. Nature, reality, truth, but with a significance, a conception, a character, which the artist brings out in it, and which he gives expression and interprets. So the artist is pulling something out of nature, being impressed by nature, inspired by nature, but extracting something out of it. Samuel Beckett. Yeah. Nothing is more real than nothing.
Yeah. Explain that, please.
No, that's your job. Poems are prayers. Yeah, so he is a writer, not a visual artist. He loved to write. Writing was his calling, and he did nothing but write. And his writings are great to read. They're, you know, every sentence is something to ponder.
He's a playwright, isn't he?
Beckett? Yeah, mostly plays, but short stories too.
Okay.
And short novels, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he did quite a bit. I don't know if he wrote poems.
Waiting for Godot, yeah?
That's his guy.
That's nothing, all right.
Yeah, see? There you go. He knew what nothing was. Fascinated by it. Yeah. A lot of his stories are like that. It's full of space. Emptiness. People drifting. So there are some ideas. I don't have a particular agenda. My agenda is just to provide some ideas, and I'm always impressed and surprised by what happens in these talks. So I'll open the floor to anybody who wants to start, and I'll hide in the corner, and we'll take it from there.
What is art supposed to do for us?
That might be the purpose, right?
I found that really interesting because it's so personal and it's so different from everyone. If I would say that I'd like to be elated or uplifted or depressed or something, I would find that very pretentious. Because you don't know until you look at a piece of art or a painting or a photograph what you're going to feel and how you're going to react and what does it do for you. It's so ephemeral and so quick, and the moment you turn your back, you may think about it and go back to it, which I do sometimes, but not always. And a lot of so-called art leaves me completely cold. I don't care. But there's the odd thing that, and I couldn't explain it, of course. I cannot explain it, why that moves me or repels me or, you know, attracts me or in some ways mesmerizes me. which I've...
Is that mysterious to you?
Yeah, it's rare, though, unfortunately.
Maybe.
I don't know what that is, but it's rare, you know. So.
Maybe we could ask also, could our culture survive without art?
Mm.
What if we didn't have any art in
right.
the world?
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, art is so subtly impressed in our lives.
That's right.
Yeah, how would, so where do you draw the line?
I don't know. I'm thinking if you were born into a world where it's just strictly technology, to say, as an example, I wonder if would we instinctively notice it, that we weren't empty.
Speak up a little bit.
I'm sorry. Would we instinctively feel empty, or would we just accept that we had an empty world without our own?
We would not, because we wouldn't know.
That's what I'm wondering, though, if you
can, that's an old.
If it's an instinctive.
I think it's part of being human. I think humans. I mean, even 35,000 years ago, the art on the wall of the caves. So I think it is part of being human. And one piece I read that I was wondering about was I had read that, you know, the octopus's garden, that they actually arrange. Garden, like they arrange their homes, I guess, with pebbles or whatever it is they happen to find in their environment, and they arrange and design their homes. So I thought, well, maybe that's part of an artistic impulse, you know, kind of like a building artistic. But I really think it's part of being human. You know, I don't think we would ever not have art or not have creativity.
I wonder if Oliver Sacks met a patient who somehow had a brain. You know, he wrote us a bunch of stories about people that had either diseases or injuries to their brain and removed certain aspects of their personality. So some people would remove emotion and others. But I have never seen a story where the person was unresponsive to art. Yeah. That to him, that helped him locate how the brain is working about certain things. So the octopus is a very sophisticated animal, apparently. And someone at the Vancouver Aquarium was talking about the octopus there on the radio, on the TV, and she said that, you know, we try to measure its rationality, its intellect, but, you know, that's our point of view. We don't know what they're actually trying to do, what they're actually thinking about. But it's interesting to see them do something like that.
That's a very interesting point this lady brought up over here. If somehow something evolved and we didn't have art, would we miss it? And then this gentleman said, no, because we wouldn't know what we were missing. But obviously, if we started painting on caves 35,000 years ago, there was a moment when the human being got to the point, you know, so where they had enough leisure time or enough intellect or enough emotive capacity that it would seem that the first drive was to somehow both record their experience for themselves, you know, to be able to share with their family group and to express to others what their experience was. And also, when you asked your question, my first thought was, it's interesting that there are no cultures that I can think of that don't have it.
So let's go fold back what you just said. The only reason we were able to have art was in excess of resources. So 85,000 years ago at the caves of Altamira, people had discovered how to herd animals and kill them. There was excess stuff. They wanted to get more, so they made up religious, well, whatever, we don't, that's our motivation. They made up this, if we can draw this thing, then perhaps we can have more food, right? So only because of an excess of what use resources or leisure time. Okay.
So their desire to do art was hooked with their desire to please God.
And have more, or have more. In the oldest North American settlement at Hayden on the Pitt Meadows, which is First Nations, there's no art for the first 10,000 years. They just built, and about 5,000 years ago, they started to create art because they had so much salmon, they had so much food. I've been talking the very first land call for natives coming from from Mongolia or whatever, right? So it's only when we have an excess. So my here's my question. Will art survive the end of cheap oil? When people have to start actually turning their front and backyards into food?
Yeah.
I'm not an artist, but I'm a computer science guy, but my craft is working with wood. And I like to make the wood look as good as I can based on my... I didn't do it when I had little kids as much as I wanted to, so that's with my girlfriend now. She's an artist at LA Park. And she struggles like the Group of Seven did. All of the Group of Seven had nothing. What did they call them? They called them knights of the empty pockets,
yeah.
But the full souls. They had nothing. But they went paddling in the north, and they hunted, and they fished. They got enough to pay for our material. So I came tonight because I'm interested in knowing if art can survive the end of cheap oil. When we all have to start scrambling and I won't be around, hopefully. So
I don't know. You seem to almost answer your question, your own question in your question, because if the seven had nothing, empty pockets, as many hundreds of thousands of artists all over the world have had, I guess it will survive. I mean, first of all, we're going to sell the oil.
Oh, they had Dr. Mick, whatever his name was, that funded them. Oh, whenever they were totally out of money, he gave them money, right? So Emily Carr too, right? She did the same.
I don't think it.
But of course, we're talking about art and the very famous names and everything. We really don't know for sure what these people who did the cave paintings in Lhasa and Altamira actually intended these wonderful drawings for. It may have been an accounting system for all we know. We don't know how many cows do I have, or how many horses, or where did they go, and let's go there, and may have been a map, it may have been anything, we really don't know.
You should take a look at them.
Yes, I did. And I'm just, whether or not that concept was even present at the time that it was art for them, we don't know that for sure, do we?
Well, in that documentary I mentioned, it's called The Cave of Lost Rooms by Herzog, he interviews a fair number of the scientists that have been working there for their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem quite convinced that you know, something very creative was going on there. They seem that.
Creative, what was the question I was going to ask now? Did they have a concept of art, or is it our concept on top of what we see 5,000 years later, you know, because we impose a lot of things that we have only we have only conjectures about. We don't know for sure. And it may have been to their god or the gods. Or it may have been a map, or it may have been, it just occurred to me, an accounting system, or it may have been to amuse their children, we don't know. But the creative impulse was there, so I guess I'm answering my own question.
There's an anecdotal story, about an Australian Aboriginal who was out with a scientist and they came across a wall painting that was began. And these are paintings that are just as old as these ones in France, you know, 30,000 years ago. And the Aboriginal person just picked up a charcoal thing and started to fix it. And the scientist, you know, watched, uh-huh. And the scientist asked, why did you do that? Like every scientist would ask, why did you do that?
Yeah.
And the Aboriginal person was quite surprised by the question and said, I'm not drawing anything. I'm just a messenger. Something like this. I'm just a messenger. So, and this came up in that documentary that I'll put it on my website.
Oh, yeah,
it's called Cave of Forgotten Dreams. They don't feel that they're actually the artist. They're just transmitting.
So are those in the Aboriginals?
That anecdotal story was.
Somewhere
in Australia.
You know, what I like to think about is the way maybe Neanderthal 150,000 years ago was sitting around and he had a full belly. And he looked up at the sun, and he saw it was round, and he kind of drew a circle in the sand. And he was like, "Whoa, look what I just did! I just look at it." Or whatever they if, you know what I'm saying? And they were like, but that was his only little bit of brief time that he had before going out and clubbing something else for food, right? Mm-hmm. But he was like, there was no motivation, it was just...
I was going to challenge the assumption that the people...
This gal's had her hand up for like 20 minutes.
It's okay. I won't interrupt anyone.
Okay, let's just let her
back. I'm going to challenge the assumption that the people in the caves were drawing because they had an excess of plenty. Isn't that also possible that they're, because of the ice age, that they did not have enough, and that one person or several people were drawing the animals that we used to know, to show to the young people?
That was the ice age.
Except for, like Jean Noel says, there was an excess of bones in those caves. There was so much food. There was
Don't know if that was before
or
after.
They know from carbon dating, they can put the excess, the time for leisure, pinpoint it within exactly the same time as the time they started painting. So there's a connection between having excess and...
Certainly leisure plays a role. You need time to do that stuff. Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's really difficult to distinguish between like function and then more than function and then like creation, because I guess it has a very blurred boundary between, you know, doing things out of necessity and then realizing that you have, the ability to do more, and that kind of implies some sort of creativity. But I wanted to bring into the discussion the purpose of art. I was just reading a little... a biography about Dostoevsky and Nietzsche that I was reading last night. And I just think the purpose of art is so important in bringing out or like expressing things that cannot be translated in any other kind of means. So Dostoevsky and Nietzsche both suffered from some kind of like epileptic seizures, and so they were really, really mentally and physically ill people, and so they couldn't really live a normal day-to-day life. They couldn't really cope with their family and friends, but they found a mechanism of expressing themselves through writing. And so they were genius philosophers and writers, but it wasn't like art was needed for them to express this kind of deep and harrowing feeling that they had in their soul, and there was no other way for them to express it. I feel like art is just this kind of universal outlet for some kind of commentary on the human, the human condition. Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Well, that's Susan Sontag's quote, right?
Yeah, but I just wanted to say that more,
Yes, I think that's true, and I don't think it really depends on, you know,
could you speak up, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think you're right. I mean, and I don't think it really depends on, you know, level of resources available to you. I mean, that would just give you a little more time to maybe become a full-time artist. But I think everyone creates in their own way. You know, I do think it's part of being human, and maybe it's also part of, you know, some animals' lives. Like when whales sing and their songs change. I mean, maybe that's music to them also, not just communication, but can be both, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe just an amount, like it becomes music, perhaps.
Yeah,
I think for humans, definitely. I think it's just part of being human.
And if art is creativity, then why to restrict it to paintings or even music or sculpture? Anything one does, one can be creative in that. In doing business, one can be creative. Or in war, one can be creative. Or in daily life, one can. So creativity is not a preserve of painters or sculptors or writers or anything like that.
Maybe that's the question. Is it the domain of a business, someone being creative in business? For me, somehow that doesn't give me the same joy or experience.
Oh, it gives them the joy. Who's doing the work?
But I think you're raising a very valid point, or a good point to look at.
Like great generals, military generals.
But
they were very creative people. They made new methods of warfare and all this.
But if you're looking at the whole society, would you look at art would you talk about art and war in the same sentence, I suppose?
No, they don't talk, and this is what I'm saying, that perhaps it is wrong. Mm-hmm. No, like creativity is, it can be like a mother when it tries to calm the child. It has so many creative
inventions
how to do it, and so this is like art and all this sort of thing, painting, sculpture. It is more like a, how to say, a pretension sort of thing. You know, like the somebody made like Mona Lisa painting, and the price is $100 million or something like this. And if the same painting, I tell you, if you put that in a market in any place, and the person, people don't know that it is priced at $100 million, and you ask for that $100, most people will not pay.
I know.
So it is the artists, they make their name, like the singers and painters and all this. So there is a lot of spurious sort of collective things going on in society.
Yeah, but art is more than what you see. It's also the ideas that go behind it too. There's a huge amount of marketing. Yeah, I mean, museums, whatever. Art is just gone way off. But if you, I was going to put another quote up. A friend of mine, a photographer, said, you know, if I would buy a photograph if I knew it was Salgado. Doesn't matter what it is, I would buy it because he took it. He wouldn't buy mine, but he would buy a photo that I could have done, but he wouldn't buy mine, he buys his because he knew he did it, and he has an idea, this person has an idea, a purpose, and that's connected to the actual work. So people that go to the Mona Lisa, I suppose not everybody, but they look at it, they don't just see, oh, a nice background and a nice face, they see, well, this is Leonardo's been doing something. He has a message here, and they think hard about it. Not all art is meant to be just face value.
Yeah, there's so many ideas in what you said there. You went from creativity not being quite a satisfying definition. It's not quite satisfying enough, creativity.
Definition of art.
But the definition of art. You know, it because it needs to also desire to communicate the experience, as this lady was talking about, the experience of being alive, or perhaps even...
See, about this communication, this is what I'm saying, that a mother becomes so creative and in communication and in making new methods for entertaining the child. So why is that not art? If it is art, is creativity.
Maybe we can come back.
I wanted to respond to that particular point. So what is the difference between everyday creativity or in you know, in your work creativity? You can be creative, like you said, in anything, right?
Yeah.
So what is the difference? I think if we forget for a minute about the art market, then we can talk about utility. And art is something that does not have any utility. A painting is, in itself, it does not help you solve any problems, it does not help you, you know, produce crops, it does not help you in business, it does not do anything for you. Anything other than that, whatever emotional value you attach to it, or whatever value people attach to the art, this is what art is. In itself, it doesn't cost anything, it does nothing.
And that will, I think we, can I interrupt him?
From the one we need to differentiate,
all people will not attach the same value. For instance, I honestly am saying that if I did not know that this is Mona Lisa and valued at 100 million, and I saw it in a village market somewhere, and he only asked me $100 for it, I will not pay.
I think we need to differentiate between what he's saying and what is art that is available due to excess resources. Okay. I can sing to my grandson, it doesn't cost me anything. I could be dying of starvation in the middle of an African jungle with no food, and I could still be trying to comfort my child by singing and being so creative. And it does, it costs me my life. But I could be sitting in a prison in Spain, some beautiful art in some of those prisons where they were dying. They were going to die. They died. and they did some amazing art, right? Okay, but we're talking about art that, like, okay, Picasso, as far as I'm concerned, I once put in my computer lab something my grandson done, a bunch of flowers when he was 7 years old in some vases, and people would come, I framed it, it looked awesome. People would come in and say, did you get yourself a little Picasso? How much was that? I said, no, my grandson did that. And they're like, oh, really? But I saw that in the Holland, you know? So we've got to differentiate. I can sit in with excess time and I can play the guitar, and people say, well, that sounds wonderful around the campfire, but I can't make a living doing that because I don't have time and resources to do that. Okay, so can we stick to the art that is as
Yeah, we're talking about there's art and the art world, and his first
not just the ability to be creative, but as you said, art that gets hung on a wall for $100 million.
I think we're getting off track.
Yeah, because
we're not here to talk about what is art, although it's gone that way, and it's an important question. I shouldn't have said what I said at the beginning, right? Let's just take our working definition to be art to be creativity. I shouldn't have said that. No. Anyways. We could discuss what art is, and these are all valid points, but let's stick to the purpose of it. How's that? What is the purpose of it? So that everybody has a different feeling for that because it affects you in different ways. You may think the purpose is based on your reaction to it, but what about the artist? What would their purpose be?
As to what purpose it serves, like, I think there is one aspect of it that serves a purpose within its time that it's famous or that it's getting known to people. My daughter took me to see the Andy Warhol show down for my birthday, and took me out there, and my son was going, oh, he's not an artist, oh, yuck, and I had to agree. He isn't like an artist, really, but he was exciting because he brought in a kind of a commercial style, saying, hey, this is our commercial world, and let's blow it up and see what fun it is, and let's see if it can capture the excitement of this time when people are doing, you know, silk screen prints and, you know, just fun stuff, postering. You know, there was a certain poster world that was exciting there. So I think that for my daughter and myself, it gave that excitement and that kind of, hey, changing values. You know, there's, you know, all kinds of kinky and weird stuff going on in the world. Let's have fun with it. So I think it documented a time that was important for people to say, hey, yeah, you know, our culture is alive and kicking, and, you know, maybe this won't last, maybe it will, but I think we can look at art as being significant in that way, as to say, hey, this is something, being a bit of a documentation of the culture at the time.
Sort of like a journalist, a commentary on society at the time.
Yeah, like having that function, and maybe
that,
a little excitement with it, or you know, bringing the emotions to that as well.
The artist part.
Yeah.
Artistic part.
Yeah.
Looking at the other side of the spectrum, that's really interesting, and you mentioned Oliver Sacks, and I just remember quite a few of his patients, he was really involved with patients with autism, and I remember this one clinical study, and she had autism, and she couldn't do simple things like tie her shoelaces or open a door, but everything she said was in poetry. Like, for some reason, she read a lot of poetry, and whenever someone asked her a question, she would say it, and it would have an amazing rhyme scheme, and it would just, like, the way, it was just amazing prose. And so for her, art was like the only way for her to interact with the world. And so I just find it interesting how much variation you can get in what is the purpose of art for different people. For some people, it's the only way for them to express themselves. And then for others, it's like an added kind of extra excitement and zeal.
So that's a very personal point of view. And I suppose many artists are driven. I've often heard the statement, you know, this person lives for their art, you know, they live for it, that's it, that's all their life is. But what beyond themselves, what are they doing for others? So someone who's desperate to, you know, whatever Svante's talking about.
Well, here the complicated thing to know the purpose of art is that, because the idea of what art is, what art should be, should do, has been changing over the course of time, and it has changed in a very radical way, because say, oh, well, in the ancient or the ancient Greek, you know, the statues, so that was considered the art, and then few centuries after, then the Mona Lisa is considered art, and then centuries after, then goes and then the Pollock's painting with brushes, and so it's considered art, and then and also the painting of the Campbell soup with Andy Warhol, that is considered art. So if we put it in the same place, okay, this is okay. This all of these pieces are art, but I don't know. They don't seem to relate to each other. This says something, but this is like the idea is different here. Or why? How can the art this statue beautiful and then this process of painting and then this just a camel soup? Or so it is. I think that to know art, I think that it's not like a definition of what art should do, because it will always want to be. I say it's more like a dynamic in relation to the world, in relation to how the world is and how the humanity has lived. So it is. I think it's for to know what art is, we have to really be critical about the world. We need to know, okay, what is the world? What is driving the world? What is the essence of the world? And maybe the art manifests it, not just explain it, and manifests it. Yeah.
Is the purpose there? How do you fit the purpose into that?
What would be the
purpose in all those very types of art that you mentioned? Do they have a common purpose?
I think he's saying it reflects our society.
Sorry?
Isn't he saying it reflects our society and what
we're doing? Is that the purpose, that's though, or that's the definition of art again?
Yeah. Or like, it is like a dynamic that reacts or that reflects the main idea of the main important ideas of the world. I will place myself closer, not exactly closer to the one that says to ask the important questions, but not to say, you know, not to put the question, just more to express it in a sensible way, when the way that you feel you perceive the question there. So
what about this one here, this very personal one? So this person, this artist may not be trying to say something about the world, but maybe it's a result of the world.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a manifestation, because you are human, you are reacting to the world. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So and that makes because you're a human, you're reacting to it, but you also have an idea of it. For example, I mean, imagine that because in the ancient, you know, this art, really pre-Hispanic or this ancient culture, they have this this statue dedicated to the gods. So, and then they say, well, when they were like kind of victims of these forces of nature, and they have to calm these forces. So they were creating art for these gods, for these forces of nature. So they were reflecting. So this is what drives them to the society. That was this ancient society were driven by the forces of nature. The gods also are. Are controlling us, so we need to create this for them, and this is what drives the world. Then comes the classic civilization, the Greeks, that said, no, it's the human, the man, the measure of all things, so we are creating with mathematics, so the art should be created with proportion, with harmony, with beauty. So then comes, well, the Christianity says, no, but the art is right. Jesus is Christ. So it comes actually with every age, it comes a new idea of art. Then the Renaissance says, no, it's the human, it's the man, the reason. So the art must be proportioned to the mathematics. So, you know, it's
right.
Going.
Yeah, so art is definitely a reflection of civilization. And I would also point out that the art that we speak of in historical terms is the art that survived. And just like today, there's lots of art that probably we never heard about. There's probably
survived.
Be people like in my neighborhood that do ceramics in the basement. They're probably there in Greek, in ancient Greek
also. Who is the Canadian Robert, the landscape? Robert Bateman said that the Greeks carved the gods out of the perfect marble perfectly, so the gods were, oh, this is fantastic, thank you for the tribute. But if Picasso had done it, he would have pissed those gods off, they would have killed him. Right? If Picasso had put an ear of the god down here and everything, he'd be like, whoa, what are you doing to me? Now you're dead meat.
Yeah, so that's why it's so now, and then because. Then the society changed, and then now now in the times of Picasso, was the time of the avant-garde, that was to break with the idea of, and they were critical to this society. So so we put there, and then we say no, the art. I think it has been changed because now then with the modern world, so the art becomes like a sort of critic of the modernity, critic of the society. So Picasso said. What's in those artists that would say the art must be self-referential, it has its own narrative, its own history, art must be created its own space. So it was Picasso, was Kandinsky, was all many other people that said, yeah, art has to be self-referential. But the other ones that were not agree with it, no, art must be close to life. So and then you have this idea, no. We created from the material.
I think that art, one of the most fundamental, I think, attributes of art is that you communicate. You communicate with your God. If art is communication, you communicate with your God or with other people. And I was thinking, well, maybe an exception could be, what if you create a drawing only for yourself? But maybe that wouldn't be art. I think communication is key. And I think you're right, but art is cumulative because we see, like all the examples you gave, we still think that's art, right? Styles change, but art itself doesn't change. But I do think, you know, communication is, if you're a cave artist, you're trying to communicate
with
the other people living in your cave, or leaving a message for people who come later. You're leaving your cave and having to move
on. Can I just agree right here? I think this is very fun to talk about things that we know we can never really pin down with words. We have to kind of agree that even for each artist, there's as many definitions as there are people in this room, or each individual artist has to come to his own definition of what art is. But for me, if the artist does not desire to communicate with anyone else, and if the art does not receive that communication, as you pointed out, it does not survive. So I may do a crappy little watercolor painting, which is just for me, and it's very pleasing, mm-hmm. and that's artistic. But it becomes what we call art, I think, when other people become challenged by it, or interested in it, or moved by it, and that's why the Campbell soup can becomes called art, because it people have a strong response.
So once again, falling into the definition of art, is it impossible to separate those two, the purpose of art and the definition? Maybe that's why we keep falling back on that. But what would be the purpose when you're doing your little watercolor for yourself? I mean, so that I would consider that art. What is the purpose for that?
Well,
what would you feel?
That's personal joy, but mm-hmm. perhaps deep in your mind you have wanted to share that with someone else. I have been an artist all my life of various types, and so it's very interesting. And when I made the transition from being an actress to being a director of theater, there's this pile of plays. When you're an actress, you must just audition for everything. You have no choice about what you get to be in. Really, if you want to work, you must audition for everything. When you get to be a director, suddenly there's a whole new process that has to go on in your mind, because you're now choosing the play. So my personal definition became, it must entertain and it must educate. Otherwise, I don't want to be personally involved. I don't want to spend my time, my energy, my life doing stuff that doesn't both educate and entertain.
That would be a purpose.
That was my personal definition.
It's often been said by not just artists, but anybody, that they read a book or they look at a painting. Even some artists, the poets, refuse to interpret their poem. It's up to them. And the painter, everyone looks at a painting differently. It may have nothing to do with what the painter was desiring. So bring up those watercolors.
Like, yeah, so I mean, now I'm that kind of artist.
Yeah, I mean, they might
and
do
it's
a wonderful thing.
It's a totally different experience, because I'm really just very interested in doing it for myself, not
sure.
for
sure.
other people.
But I'm sure other people would get something out of it. You know,
yeah.
That's the mystery.
They do, actually.
That's the
that
mystery.
Is a mystery. It's a great mystery.
Over here?
So,
yeah.
Over here?
Over here?
Over
here.
Well, let's start here, and then we'll work our way around.
One of my favorite words lately has been reflection, and we've heard this word like rolling around here a few times, and maybe this is something that can encompass different like purpose of different kinds of art, from ancient Greeks to Mona Lisa to Christian art to Campbell soup. So if you look at it as a reflection of beauty, of a religious idea, personal reflection on your personal theme, as Susan Sontag put it here. So maybe this is something that will give us kind of a bird's eye view on the purpose. But another side of it is also communication, because if you make art and nobody will ever look at it, will it be art?
Well,
maybe not.
Well, we don't want to talk about the definition again.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, if you are an artist and you're making art just for yourself, I don't know. Do you?
I'm sure
ever,
it's been done.
I guess everybody wonders.
I'm sure it's been
what
done.
If no
and it's valid art. I'd say it's valid art. You know, if someone dug up those old manuscripts or whatever, they're always finding these old paintings and things, and they bring them out, and people love them. Doesn't matter what the artist intended. I think. Okay, let's move on.
I don't think there is a purpose for art. I don't think that's a statement that is good for the whole. No, that's.
How should I retitle this?
Yeah. Retitle this.
The talk. Like,
well, I think it's a great.
It's too
a good question, but I'm wondering: do we want art to have a purpose? Art is, I think, something so subjective that it doesn't follow rules to make it have a purpose.
Well, that's a tricky word. I mean, purpose, that's the bad word.
So that's why
maybe I shouldn't use that word. I mean, what's the goal of it, or, you know, what?
And I'm sort of questioning whether something has to be validated by everybody else to make art. I think art can be very
personal,
artistic
very
and creative on its own. Yeah.
And also that art, sometimes has been many times subversive. So if we say, what is the purpose of art? Oh, the purpose of art is this one. So that means that if this art doesn't do this, also it's not art anymore. So maybe now we art, maybe the art will come with a definition again, and we do something that is not the purpose of art. And then art will have another purpose. So every time that is a definition that is like a canon that the art has to follow, the art will rebel, especially the artist will rebel against this definition and then go in another way, because the artist doesn't support the rule, this canon that they have to be following,
yeah.
So they will subvert
yeah.
that definition.
That's a great word, rebel. I mean,
art probably is impossible to box in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's its name. That's a good definition.
Yeah.
I agree with every one of these statements on the left-hand side. I don't know about the nothing is more than real than nothing. I don't understand that. But every one of these definitions pertains to what people have been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in there for
we
everyone.
We talk about nature.
The nature, it's... For example, I really like the Van Gogh.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little clumsy and long,
mm-hmm.
but I can see how he explained, almost like explaining his paintings, maybe, you know. But every one of these definitions is right on the button, and they're all different. They're personal, they're cultural, they're religious, they're societal, everything,
This guy.
Sometimes I feel that when we speak about the purpose of art, what is art, where does it come from, we are restrained by the idea of trying to find the beginning and an end, without recognizing that sometimes the beginning and end as to be asked, is there a beginning or is there an end, is there a purpose or not, is like asking, is there a beginning or an end of the universe, which is something unanswerable. I think it has no answer. I think when an artist is creating something, and where inspiration comes from, is something that you begin to feel, and it departs from the conscience part of it. It departs from your thinking, from that voice inside of your head saying, I'm actually doing this, I'm thinking about doing it. So it becomes like an idea of, is your essence acting upon it? It's something that comes further than yourself, before than yourself. It's something that is maybe something that we are not able to say it's ours. So at that point, not even an artist would know what is the true purpose of their own art. They're just creating the art how they feel it, but can we actually control our feelings?
Exactly why it's so ambiguous also.
So that's what I think. Can we actually...
From the unconscious.
Yeah, it's from the unconscious.
It's clearly from unconscious. We humans have an unconscious.
We feel.
Let me have an
answer. I just wanted to make a short comment about the purpose of art. I think the better question would be, what is the purpose of the artist when he is making that art?
Might be easier.
So, it is. Sorry, because it is a philosophical sort of thing. Like, there is no purpose of the table. Purpose only comes...
My microphone.
So that is your purpose.
Yeah.
So the point I was trying to make is that things don't have purpose. It is a intentional living being who can have a purpose.
Living being or just living, anything living?
A conscious being.
A conscious being.
Yeah. Okay. Which can. So... about this purpose of art, so I would rather put it like, what is the purpose of the artist in creating that? So then it becomes easier, like I think, that when an artist makes a piece of art, his purpose can be self-expression. He wants to express some feeling or some idea and to share it with others. And then another would be that he just wants to create it because this gives him a release sort of thing. Something is boiling within him and he wants to express it. So these are the two. And
it's not for other people, in other words.
Pardon?
It's not for other people, you mean?
No. I mean, the first thing which I said was that he wants to express something, share something with other people. Like he wants to express an idea that other people will comprehend it. And then, to be honest, the purpose of art is mostly when people do it. It is their profession. They have to maintain their art studio. They have to sell it. And that is the purpose.
That crops it.
That's the living.
Yeah. I would add also, before we take other comments, that purpose is just as equally important on the observer side. I think the purpose is equally important on the observer side, not the creative person created.
Yes.
It resides with the observer.
Yes. Yeah. So what is the purpose of the observer in buying a piece of art?
No. What does the observer get from art?
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to buy it.
Okay, so that's not purpose. Like,
that's not?
I'm sorry, yeah. And so, yeah, that's the same thing. All right. So, what does the reader or an observer or a seer of a painting, what he gets is, perhaps it touches some emotion in him. Like, for instance, about music, I can say with myself. Like, painting a center, they don't move me. But there are some sort of music, and they move me without, I can't control it. I start to cry, which is very strange for me.
Do you think the composer meant to make you cry?
Composer?
Of the music?
Do you think
he meant to make you cry?
I don't think so, but he wanted perhaps to
give you some
way,
provide a way.
I don't know, like he wanted to, maybe he wanted to express what is boiling in him, or what is even troubling him.
Mm-hmm. And you interpret it differently.
Pardon?
And you interpret it differently. Because you listen to it connects to some sort of memory or whatever.
Yeah, like different people interpret it differently. Like the music which moves me may not move some other people, and vice versa. So it is that sort of.
So that's a purpose we can attach to.
How about if Beethoven, Mozart just want to make a living so they can keep writing music, so that people would like their music, they would write it, so they would that's what they actually did, right? To make some money. The same way as, I don't even know the names of it, Puff Daddy, D Diddy, B Diddy, whatever they write, they only want to do is sell their clothes and make a living. And that's what Beethoven did, he had to make a living.
I think we get that one.
But some of the musicians or painters or sculptors were compelled to do that. They were compelled to do whatever it was they were doing, sculpting or painting or composing music, because they didn't want to, and they couldn't do anything else because they were taken up with that. They were compelled from the inside to do that. I think Mozart.
That is something boiling in.
Their art is so important to them.
I think that's where Sontag's quote comes in, and that's why feels compelled to give voice to one's pain.
Although I would change
the word pain, not change it, but add to give voice to one's joy, happiness,
charity,
all of those other things. I don't think that art of any type is necessarily done just to make money. That's like and it could be art for one's own sake. You might share it only with your friends, or not at all. But you released some joy, and someone who does see that, they realize.
I would like to make that distinction that art can be interpreted in any old way, independent of how it was created. Yeah. So whether it was created to make money, to please the neighbor, to annoy the neighbor, it's independent of what people may respond. So that's what I view as valuable about art. You know, it's something.
If you have nothing to eat and drink, you won't be producing art for very long.
We're going back to the story about
exactly.
But
you know, from my girlfriend's favorite, she said that Michelangelo was told that you don't create art, blah blah blah. You create it because you have to. Well, he was getting paid a lot of money weekly by Lorenzo de Medici. So it was easy for him to say, I have to create this, right? Because he was getting paid. But his friends went by the wayside and started becoming meat carvers and butchers and whatever, because they couldn't make a living at art, right? So they fell by the wayside. They didn't make art. Some of the greatest artists never made art, right? Here, I just want to show you one thing. This is Tommy Thompson, Canadian artist, right? So he was just shite on when he first started producing. Now, he died from a drowning accident canoeing, right? But no art that I saw in 69, 70 when I traveled in Europe, nothing spoke to me. Brutal the Elder, oh, fantastic. Little kid skating on a pond. It looks almost like a photograph, but it didn't speak to me. When I saw this photograph being a kayaker, and when I saw Emily Carr, and I can't describe Emily Carr except for she's big and green and dark, and oh my goodness, I love going in that forest, but my wife at the time, she was like, yes, I like going. She was orange, you have something to see. Go after the cougars or whatever. But those are not photographic art, right? So they were, both of those artists were poo-pooed for their artwork because they were just like, this is 1912, right? It was just like interpretive art. It's like, the European landscape art just wasn't working for Canadians.
What are you getting at?
I'm getting at the fact that these, well, they both actually had got paid to make art by Dr. whatever.
Carr and...
Yeah,
Thompson.
So, but... Oh, and I want to just go back, I'll say the last thing. I'll go back to those, I've been to the Caves of Altamira. I have not been to the Scout, but in the Caves of Altamira, you would originally have to have crawled on your hands and knees 450 meters in, and as Gene Hall says, nobody went in there. It was just the select few people. We know that over 8,000 years because of the skin cells that they found in the sand. There were 10,000 people living there. Only probably a total in the whole time, maybe 800 people actually went in there. So those were not for anybody. But now we go in, we walk in because they carved the path, right?
I'd like to interrupt you a minute, yeah. If I could. Yeah, I think that what you were saying about the response of people is really important too. Because for me, art is an antidote to war, like to the war mentality. When people are doing art, when they're being creative, when they're sharing their art, when people are perceiving art and, you know, accessing it or whatever, that to me draws out different psychological mindsets than that which causes people to hurt each other or plan to hurt each other. So that's my personal view of it. But one time this fellow said, art is socially defined, and I kind of resented that statement, but I sort of couldn't argue against it either. So that kind of brought me to a feeling of paradox, or what's that thing you had there about it being
ambiguous.
Yeah, because
that's the definition part of it.
The definition part, that it is socially defined, and when it comes to paying money for art, yeah, there's a heavy social definition there. When it comes to people going to an art gallery, well, does that mean anybody could put their art up in an art gallery? No, it's got to go through a filtering process. So I think you have that complex idea of whether, what was that saying, but is it art? Remember that thing, but is it art? You know, and you have your highbrow level, and then you have your, you know, contemporary, and so so there'll always be discussion about art and its value, I guess.
Well, you know, I think that it's also comes down with the idea that I would say that art is more like a dynamic, but an ideal dynamic. Even that I could define art will create an art that defies my idea. But I think that art is always a dynamic concept, because even challenging the notion of the creation, we have said no art is creation, but we have in a museum a urinal from Marcel Duchamp, he signed it, and even that he says, no, ready-made. He said that he didn't create it, he just took it from some place and put it, and now it's in a museum, it's considered art. Or photographers that just took photographs of another photographer, and now this is considered art also, so they weren't created. Think also, let's say, art is, someone said that art is an idea. Well, I think that is one of the main, maybe common points, that it's different to make, to just make a beautiful color or a beautiful painting or a beautiful music, that is like more craftsmanship. But because the difference between craftsmanship to doing something and the art, that the art is an idea, and it's also the idea, not any idea, the idea that it is that is behind this thing, this creation, or this act of choosing something, or this performance even. So this manifestation that you could create.
It moves people. It causes what you were saying, the response part, that's so important.
Yeah. Okay. We'll say that part. One of the, because the art also has several purposes, and many of the art movement, instead of defining what the purpose of art, they were kind of debating, discussing, refuting themselves, maybe, or even fighting, because no, art should be this, or should serve for this, or should be served for this. So even what you said, no, art should be created for, but many artists celebrated the world, especially the ones from we would say that the one of many Italians, you know, with the fascism, with the Nazism, they were celebrating the war because, yeah, and then this is the art that most.
Yeah, that's in the abstract, though. I mean, I don't think when you're doing the art and when you're focusing on art creativity, it brings out the need to, you know, it doesn't bring out those emotions that want people to go to war.
Some artists would say, no, but we say you're right, art should fight or should criticize or should stand, make a stand against the war. Other people say, no, art, sometimes we need to have to embrace the war because this is the ideal of our society. So it's hard to define the arts because every time that has been defined or he has been put a purpose, this comes a person that challenges that purpose.
Yeah, like
that
challenges
you're purpose,
saying
so.
There's as many definitions of art as there
I was thinking that back to the purpose of art, I guess I found it really interesting what you said about how some art really speaks to you and then some art just seems to, for some reason, like have no kind of impression. And I think that the thing that makes art purposeful is or very impressionable is that it was some kind of social commentary. I mean, just what I'm getting at, what everyone's saying is that it's someone who's not satisfied with present condition, and whether it's a self-expression, if it's a self-expression, then it means that they're somehow unsatisfied with the life that they're living. So they express themselves in this way. So in that sense, it's also a type of social commentary. And I think those types of art are the ones that kind of last and become ageless, and the ones that actually make an impression, whereas the ones, like you said, of people trying to just, you know, please the world, I feel like that art becomes easily, like it just loses its importance, and it kind of just becomes one of, you know, a million other portraits or something. I've gone to so many museums and just been so unimpressed with, like, portraits, even though I know they're very beautiful, but then I go see Emily Carr and I'm also very emotionally moved by it. And I think it's because she was making a social commentary about, you know, the native tribes in the forest, or just a life that was very different than what maybe European colonization was looking for.
So that's part of the ideas in the background you put into the paintings. She may have felt that way too, but, you know, someone comes into the gallery at the Vancouver Museum, the Emily Carr Gallery, and, you know, what impresses, you know, they're carrying their ideology in there, and then they can form whatever impression they want. So it comes a lot from the person.
I would say in opposition to these two, that to me, collectivist argument, what these people are expressing, collectivist argument and economic argument, they're not really what art is. They are aspects of the process and whatever, but they are not really what art is. I would agree with my friend here that it's like communicating, even not communicating, but expressing certain feeling, certain information, what actually artist comes to. And this information cannot be expressed in any other ways. And also, artist is kind of a calling, like internal calling. It's not people just for economic or whatever reason. They may try, but it's not what it's originally. It's like, I am sure that every tribe, whatever hungry they were, had a musician or somebody who kind of tried to create something. I'm pretty sure, because of old villages, like cultures were not industrially developed. So every village had musicians, they have artists, whatever economic situation they are in. But in my view, it's like basically artists who I know, and it's like internal calling. It's basically internal drive which drives them to create something, and they have start with vision, which is not kind of, it's like a blurred vision, and then comes basically developing, which is like left brain, basically like practical skill to express it. But everything starts with, you think that Picasso, for example, his picture was in his head, And he usually, he painted it in a couple of hours. The whole picture, what he needed, like in tiny detail, kind of, it's not every time.
A colleague, you said. Yeah. A colleague.
Or Van Gogh also. We know about his struggle, how he tried to basically and everything, but and he was not rich or anything. He doesn't care actually. No care what he earns or whatever. Yeah.
What about photorealism though, where somebody tries to copy something really exactly, make it look like a picture?
I think photo is actually art because of, to me.
Pardon me?
Photography is actually art to me.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you said the person has a picture in their head, but supposing they just wanted to do an exact replica of something, and people would say, oh, isn't that wonderful? That's a marvelous rendition of something, but it wasn't coming necessarily, or was it?
If you think of photography, yeah. I have done photography myself, actually.
Yeah.
See, what you do is... you still have vision, and sometimes you discover this vision, of course, from the photos. But it's to communicate something. It's like you some information what you actually discover.
You're selecting, right?
Yeah.
You're
what is original? Yeah.
I'd really like to pick up on that for a moment, because there was a thought I was playing with that with the photorealism. Mm-hmm. We have a Jonas de Jong, a South African artist, not particularly well known, and he has a Karoo shop painting. We have it on the wall at sunrise, and it's fairly photorealistic, but at the same time, it just takes me. I'm not going to cry right now.
Oh, no.
Because of the absolute beauty of it, and the transport, and it's just him expressed through this terribly simple, and it's completely the opposite extreme from. But it's simple and it's beautiful and it's from his heart.
Is it a photograph or photorealism?
No, it's an oil painting.
I was going to go back on her point. Photorealism, to me, as a photographer, my own art, that thing, the first time I saw it, that's amazing. And then after three or four more, I was like, do that with the photo. But then you go to Google the Elder and those kind of people that kind of, sort of, put some kind of, then you come to something that really gives you that Emily Carr kind of draws you in. It's not realistic at all. Photography, and if you're Joseph Karsh and you walk over to Winston Churchill and you go, try to capture you there, buddy, grab his cigar out of his mouth just as he goes, and you take a photograph of him, that's the Winston Churchill everybody remembers, right? It can't just be Winston Churchill with a cigar, right? So photographers who do art are really artists, but anybody can take photographs and catch the light just right, people go, that's a wonderful photograph.
It's the technological tool that everybody can use. It didn't used to be like that. Not everybody could pick up an oil brush and start painting. So now everybody can pick up a camera.
I find it interesting that most of this discussion has revolved around visual arts. We haven't included much on the other art forms, such as music.
No, we can. Yeah. That's why I distinguish music. I mean, like Avinash was saying, and I think we music somehow seeps into our unconscious in ways that the visual, well, maybe the visual, seeps into your unconscious there. But often the music is something that really moves you physically, and it can move you physically. So maybe, what is the musician doing in that case? You know, the music that I mentioned, Gavinash, is the composer trying to make you cry or trying to bring out a certain reaction in you? And I would say probably not. People would react differently to music, to Beethoven or whatever music. They'd have a different reaction to it, but they'd have a reaction at least. Whether they like it or whether they want to or not, how's that? I mean, do paintings do that to you? They can affect you whether you want to or not.
Is poetry art?
Yes, it is.
Sure.
Yes. So,
just about whether the composer wanted you to cry or not. The minute you said that, I saw this, opera, the Pagliaccio opera, and he sings "Ridi Pagliaccio," and everybody goes, Oh my God! I mean, and but music. I mean, it's not just that. I'm sure he wanted you to feel something, to be to feel the drama and the tragedy of that particular person. There's lots of others, but I'm only going to do that one. But also, I think there's a physical connection with your ear and the brain, and the vibrational effect on your whole body, which paintings do not.
So I think the question.
I don't know. I think, you know, maybe in general, maybe we are more open to the effects that music can have on us. Because I know that, you know, poetry, painting can have that same physical effect. I mean, I remember reading once about somebody who saw a painting in the museum, and, you know, it's like there's a poem by Ethan Cummings, and he's just saying, you know, he's talking about how he was struck, moved, and changed. And I think that, you know, art has that power, but I don't know, it seems that for us, for most of us, music seems to do it, but then I think some of us are, you know, very privileged in that maybe we're educated, more educated about visual art or about poetry, and then it's, you know, and it strikes us just as powerfully as music might. Like, I mean, poetry can do that, absolutely, and I think visual art also, you know. And then, you know, I guess the artist has a responsibility, too, because I know that, you know, Bertinsky, his paintings of, not paintings, photographs of the oil field, like, I heard him speak, and he was talking about, well, you know, I don't really have a, you know, I don't really make any judgments, I just make these paintings, but, you know, it just kind of makes you wonder. And then sometimes a propaganda film, like Nazi propaganda and that sort of thing, that, you know, that strikes, moves, and changes people. I mean, there's a real responsibility
there.
They
were doing something.
Like, you know, it's but yeah, I think, you know, there is something about art. It's like you have to be open in some way, and I think art education helps you be open, and it helps you maybe enjoy life more, or, you know, you can kind of. Artists can communicate to you more effectively, or you can, you know, and it expands your life, increase it.
Coming back to the music one more time, when you read poetry, okay, you read poetry, sometimes it affects, I'm just talking for myself, it affects me, sometimes it doesn't, most of the time it kind of doesn't. But when somebody reads the poetry and they read them really well, it's like music. And it is, yeah, we don't have enough of that. Because I give you that volumes of poetry, and I have got a whole stack of them, but I very rarely pick them up. But when I hear somebody with this beautiful Welsh voice or whatever, whoever is reading it, it's a whole different story. Then now you get the words, the brain involved, you the heart involved, and your whole body is involved. You know, it's just so amazing.
Different experience.
So,
yeah.
So that is music.
Yeah.
That is
music
also.
Sure.
Just great.
Another big thing. Oh, go ahead.
Well, just a comment about Adele's music. I think a lot of dogs start howling to that. If they're one particular, you know.
That's good.
Well, I think so. I think they pick up on the vibration, like she writes it, and she, you know, kind of moves you, you know, moves people.
It makes them think about food.
The dogs can pick up on that because of her voice and the way it's sensitive.
So maybe that's what art does, it appeals to all your senses.
Your instincts,
yes. Certainly it does.
I was just going to say that something we haven't talked about this thing about the difference between visual art and music or theater art or poetry art is that the audience itself is a group of people are collected and they become a personality and they interact with the performers, whereas no matter how many other people are in the museum, you're having a pretty individual experience with that piece of art. And even though I may be having my individual experience with a play and everyone else is having their individual experience, we are an audience, and audiences do start to laugh together or cry together or not, and have very specific personalities. And if you perform the same play in front of different audiences every night, it is a very fascinating function of art to see
how different experiences.
Which is the music of it.
And now you came here tonight as a mathematician, right?
I came here as a moderator.
And if I'm not mistaken, the brochure mentioned the connection between mathematics and music.
Did I say that? Well, I didn't, but there is definitely a connection.
But that's the point.
Sure.
The mathematics of the music mm-hmm. is what, you know.
Mm-hmm. The structure.
Yes.
Yeah, it's there.
And then you can, in all the things, visual, the whole thing, mathematics.
Right, okay.
So my question is you as a mathematician, whatnot, what do you suppose came first, the music or the math?
About the same time.
I think so.
Well, math is a mystery too. Where math, we missed that philosopher's cafe. We had a cafe about where mathematics invented or discovered. You know, it's a mixture of both. I think most people would say, but it's a creative it's just as creative as art. So we had another cafe on art and science, and we discussed how
go back,
the similarities.
Go back to the music, the math, and the music. Never mind the science. The music, is very mathematical, isn't it?
There are those who are
well versed in the music, know the mathematics, and what mathematics to use in order to move you.
That's true. There's something called the demonic fifth, that will move you. But
it works every time.
But
it never fails. That's why it's mathematics.
The Greeks discovered certain harmonies that are pleasant, and they have a certain mathematical structure. But there's plenty of music that does not have that mathematical structure, which is still pleasant. So I think the Greeks, a lot of the classical
jazz.
Well, yeah, that's a good example. But the classical period, you know, Bach, Beethoven, that was a very structured and rigid, creative period in classical. And they just figured out the mathematical formulae of classical music.
Then
the other stuff came.
They figured out the art.
Well, at the same time,
I have to admit, it's taken me a little while, this conversation, although very beginning you mentioned something with music, and I'll get to, but now that we're really getting into it, mm-hmm. what I find it interesting is, well, of course, you know, with music, it has the general styles, labels, or genres is like the most famous word I hear around a lot. You know, you got your country, rock, contemporary, and all that. But they've all have intertwined, like, you early, like you mentioned about, you know, what would I forget how you turned it, either Beethoven would have thought of Zeppelin or Zeppelin would have thought of Beethoven, but people would be surprised, of course, and I'll take the style of music of heavy metal. There is a lot of heavy metal guitarists who have taken classical music and put it into their wrist. Mm-hmm. It's just a different way, it's just a more aggressive way. Mm-hmm. It was like Robert Plant explaining his Zeppelin's music. We simply took the blues and put it on steroids. Now there was a lot more to it than just the blues. They had Celtic, they had Arabic, they had a whole, you know, calamity of different influences. So I mean, they all do. I mean, we have these separate categories, but they've all, at one point or another, have intertwined with one another.
Also, we cannot forget the critical part always say, because usually. We tend to feel it's pleasant, or the music is pleasant, but that doesn't necessarily make it art, because there's music that is not pleasant, but it's considered art also, Or even music like people piece that the man just sitting in front of the piano and didn't do nothing. And this is a piece, a musical piece, So even that is not music at all, but then another person says, but silence is also music. So silence is also music. Yeah. So of course, it looks more like a performance that is really composed, or you have this music that starts to make a piano, but it doesn't sound like pleasant, so more like dissonant, like disruptive, and that's more thing, or maybe even some people say, oh no, metal music is not pleasant because this distortion and that, or another person says, oh no, but this is art, and the art also sometimes need to be disruptive, need to be dissonant, or music, because this a part of us that is also dissonant, disruptive, angry, so then now you have another it says the music that is not pleasant is also art. Or
even to some people, it's not pleasant. To some yeah. people, but to others, mm-hmm. it's
or maybe even they say, yeah, I mean, this music makes me puke, but it's art because it produced me this puking. So they have an idea of what is art. Maybe that art should not be pleasant or should make you puke. Also, and then well, comes again the idea that. Okay, no, it's pleasant or not, it's not pleasant, but it both have art, yeah.
It's up to the person how they interpret it. I think this was there a question?
Oh, I wanted to jump in on South Africa here. I found it was really interesting when Mr. de Klerk said that he was kind of moving towards end of apartheid when he saw the massacre at the townships, and he had just looked at his own young offspring. And then he started the process, but when the South Africans won the Rugby World Cup, he said he knew that he had made the right decision to move. And that's video. That's something we haven't talked about, right? Video on television and video at the sporting event moved him so much that he was now at peace with the apartheid ending.
Yeah. Yeah. Another purpose.
Left Fusiliers that in the Spanish Prado, somebody had said that war can be stopped by, when you see, people said that was a cartoon, but when you see the look in the people's eyes of the guy is executing the guy against the wall, it's the most horrific reminder that the war for independence in Spain was such a futile, just, right on.
Yeah, I was sort of speaking kind of generally, but it seems like with everything you say about art, there's an exception to it.
No. It just like you said, it's yeah. so powerful. Very. War is so.
So the response to it is sort of an antidote in that way.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for your very interesting comments. It was quite an interesting, invigorating discussion. So there will be a posted at some point. Oh.